All right. So first, thanks to the organizers for inviting me. It's been a lot of fun thus far. So today I'm going to talk about need some application basically of the flux factor counting techniques developed by Mike and Sujay Ashok and myself to the problem of counting black hole microstates, and in particular to test a conjecture by Auguri, Strominger, and Vafa in that context. So setting in which we work is type 2A string theory on some Calabi-Yau tree fault, which in four dimensions gives an n equal to supergravity theory coupled to some vector multiplets, also to some hypermultiplets, but they are more or less irrelevant in this discussion. Okay, and so in that theory, we're going to consider BPS states, BPS bound states, of, well, a prior in general, D6, D4, D2, D0 brains. Actually, we're going to restrict to D4, D2, D0, but a priori, the story should hold for this completely general bound states. So in four dimensions, these guys manifest themselves as black holes, BPS black holes, which are electrically and magnetically charged. So So the electric charge is, by convention, at least in large volume radius, are naturally D0 and D2 brain charges. So the D2 brain charges come in an index A, labeling the number of, well, labeling the independent two cycles or homology classes, two homology classes in the Calabi-Yau threefold. So we'll denote this charge, D0 charge by Q naught, and D2 brain charge by Q lower A. And similarly, the magnetic charges correspond to the massive, or the heaviest D brains. So that means D6 and D4 A brains. And so we will denote these magnetic charges by P naught, PA, respectively. Okay. So at large volume, at least these bound states are described as, you know, some magnetic brain with flux turned on. Right. So that's, you know, dissolving, of course, lower dimensional brains in higher dimensional brains you can do by turning on fluxes. Okay, so the problem general problem in this setup is, well, basically to count the number of BPS states with given charge Q and P. Okay. So we denote this by omega BQ. Which, well, possibly you could count the states with signs. In this case, it's an index. But anyway, omega PQ is some measure for the number of BPS states with charge P and Q. And so, okay, so, well, that's one thing. But then, of course, the physically interesting thing is to compare this to the supergravity prediction. So to leading order, the supergravity prediction is just a Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, possibly refined to Walt entropy if one takes into account curvature corrections. That has been tested for quite some time. But the thing is, recently there's been a proposal to actually refine this correspondence and to go beyond the leading order to at least all orders in some 1 over n expansion, possibly even exact. Okay, so the conjecture by Aguri, Strominger, and Fafa. OSV goes roughly as follows. So I propose a very concrete formula for omega pq, namely as the Laplace transform of some function e to the curly f bm phi, which we already defined in a minute, just by q dot phi. So this is a multidimensional integral. There is a phi, a potential for every q, as Hiroshi explained yesterday. The phi here is just for convenience. Okay. So this up to possibly exponentially small corrections. Okay. And exponentially small, I mean, then in some large charge approximation. So e to the minus this large charge. Okay, so what is this curly f? So the idea is that this is the this is what you compute from the gauge theory side microscopically, and this is what comes from the gravity side, if you want, generalizing the Bekenstein-Hawking prediction. More precisely, this f is it's determined from the four-dimensional low energy effective action, which in turn this part of it, which is in turn determined by the topological string amplitude, and has this form. So, let's see, f topological string free energy, which depends on the topological string coupling and the moduli TA. So it's this plus this complex conjugate, where one makes the substitutions. G topological is replaced by 4 pi over phi naught plus I p naught, and TA, which prior is defined as some xA over x naught, is given by EA plus I phi A plus I phi naught. And actually, we will be interested eventually in the case if P naught equals zero. So in that case, we just get this. Okay. This F topological is the generalized prepotential and has the very rough form. So I'm dropping all coefficients here. There's some 1 over g topological squared, some cubic part, right, which involves different intersection numbers, which I suppress now, plus some order g 0 linear term, and then an infinite series of instanton corrections, Kronman-Witten invariants. So it looks roughly like something like this. Something like that. Right. Quadratic term here. Yeah, but you can, that depends by, it depends how you choose your basis. You can, if you choose a basis of charges corresponding to how the RR fields couple, then you get this cubic part. More generally, you can get quadratic. And I mean, here you mean in the leading part, right? Yeah. No further what?
One over t corrections.
in this yeah. Formula? Well, this is the prescription. That will be my starting point. I don't know if there is... Well, the original motivation comes from the fact that precisely this prescription gives, if you do the subtle point evaluation of this integral, gives you the Bekenstein, Hawking, Walt entropy.
Right, so
exactly that.
The
so
the
this and not.
Well, I think probably a safe way to say it is that if the leading Bekenstein, Hawking entropy works for P naught is zero, for the other choices of the P's, then you would expect such a formula. Sometimes the leading one doesn't work. For example, when there are no attractive point solutions, then you would doubt this and you might start with exponential corrections to begin with. So.
Right. Yeah, so probably nothing more intelligent to say about this, but we'll just take this as a starting point and test this. Yeah. Right, so...
There's no argument based on SL2 transformation.
The argument for what?
For this
formula, no.
So the as I mentioned already, the saddle point approximation the leading order of this integral is just e to the s Walt p and q. So to leading order, this formula says nothing but omega pq equals the exponential of the Walt entropy. And of course, what's interesting about this is that this gives an infinite series of 1 over s, 1 over n corrections, right? plus possibly exponential corrections that go beyond this leading order result. Okay. So that also means that, and this has been a major obstacle in testing this conjecture, that one has to compute this omega pq to an accuracy that goes beyond this leading order. So you have to do more work. All right. Now, there is an alternative form of the conjecture, if you want, which you obtain by inverting this relation. That's actually the one we're going to work with today. And that simply looks like, if you sum up the omega pqs weighted by e to the minus pi q phi, then you get simply this thing. Now, this is actually not quite accurate if you invert this. So the thing is, this function f is not periodic in phi. So the only way that this can make mathematical sense is if you take phi to run over, say, the entire imaginary axis, or over an infinite interval in any case. So if you invert this equation, then you can easily see that there will always be a sum over integral imaginary shifts of phi of this function. So this is the more precise formulation. Now, for our purposes, this will not matter this much because these higher order shifts will actually be exponentially suppressed. But
isn't it the case that this is somewhat ambiguity? I'm curious because purity implies sort of non-conservative, right?
Well, this is just a simple mathematical fact. If you invert an integral like this, right, you get the matrix this sum over k. I mean, this is it's just the inverse transform.
Isn't this a little bit related to Sergei's question? Start changing.
Well, effectively, maybe you can.
This actually can be interpreted as summing over fluxes, normal fluxes on the right side.
Right. So it's a sum over the dual lattice, if you want, to the charged lattice here. It's the same. It's sort of what you use to show this starting from that is basically just same formula as using Poisson resummation. So you go from. Yeah, so the case take natural values in lattice dual to the electric charge lattice.
So is there a tractor equation?
Yeah, tractor equation is a saddle point equation for this. So that looks like... so the saddle point equation for this is just df d phi equals minus p q, right? So there's an index for us. Right. Solving this equation and plugging it back in these things give you the attractor point. That's the attractor equation. Okay. Okay, so what? So a significant problem in testing this conjecture is actually that it is in general very hard to get sufficiently accurate computations of this omega pq microscopically. Right, so it's a problem. Okay. So some known cases are where things are known exactly, actually, are d4, d2, d0 brain chart, d4, d2, d0 bound states into A, which are dual to perturbative heterotic string states. There, obviously, you do know the exact degeneracies. Please compute them. And these guys correspond to so-called small black holes. The problem with the small black holes is that they're of course interesting on themselves, but they are somewhat degenerate and you quickly run into murky issues of well-definedness and so on. Other cases that are known are d4, d2, d0 brain charges, states in non-compact Calabi-Yau manifolds. So this is a case Kumrun and Hiroshi and collaborators have been focusing on and have been various tests of this conjecture. Of course, with non-compact Calabi-Yau manifolds, the black hole interpretation is less clean, perhaps, because of course, if you have a non-compact Calabi-Yau, you don't have a real compactification, a Newton constant is zero, and so on. So of course, there are ways to give this an interpretation in this setting. But nevertheless, it's obviously more desirable to have some exact or sufficiently accurate computations of omega pq for just, large, nice black holes in a compact Calabi-Yau. There's a little bit known about that as well. So, for example, on T6 and T2 times K3, there are some formulas proposed that count exact degeneracies. So for T2 times K3, there's this formula of Dekker, Friedman, and Linden, and Also, Greg contributed to many of these things. More recently, Strominger, Shi and Yin have used this in this context. And actually, I saw that this morning there was a paper on the archive by Shi and Yin where they use these results also to test this conjecture, and they get some nice results. They work in a regime somewhat complementary to the one I'm going to work in, but there is some overlap, and as far as I could tell in these few minutes that I've been able to look at the paper, the results do agree. So, anyway. But obviously, these have higher supersymmetry. Again, since the original conjecture is formulated for n equals 2 theories, this gives some ambiguity in how exactly to interpret the conjecture in this case. So, what I'm going to do today is generalize this or extend this list.
Is there a philosophy that we should choose n equals 2 subalgebra and try to run OSP with it?
Yeah, that's one way to do it. So, for example, in this paper by Shi and Yin, they actually do both. Like they do a computation for where you do select some effective some n equals 2 subalgebra and you sum over some subset of the charges that fit in that. They also give an expression for when you sum over all possible charges, and you get two different results, but they're not. They sort of only differ from each other in a somewhat trivial factor. It looks trivial if you use the right notation, but it's a priori not clear, I guess, which is also why it's desirable to get any. Yeah. Yeah. At least that's their claim. But it looks very correct to me. All right. So in the following what am I going to do? So I'm going to look at totally general D4, D2, D0 systems wrapped on arbitrary divisor, compact Calabi-Yau, arbitrary Calabi-Yau. Yeah. So compact and arbitrary. Right. So P not equals 0, of course. And I can do something like that. Of course, it's not that I've suddenly turned into Superman and I'm able to compute the exact degeneracies for this D4, D3, D0 systems. So there's one prize that I'm going to pay, and that is that I'm going to do this in a large Q-naught approximation. Okay. So, as it will turn out, making this approximation actually, it will kill a lot of the finer structure of the problem, in particular anything related to instanton corrections will be killed, but at the same time, there will still be quite some non-trivial structure left, and so it turns out that you just kill off enough to make the computation possible, but not too much to make it uninteresting. Okay, and so the way...
So you're saying that this limit will get rid of the first two terms, to check the first two terms?
That will, yeah, so okay, I'll get to that.
The constant of the last term?
So these two terms.
And how about the constant term of the last term?
That will be, so that constant term is suppressed by a power of phi naught, and large Q naught will mean small phi naught. But I'll.
So that means that the large G topological?
Yeah, that's right. It's large G topological. However, so a priori, that's what I was going to get to. So let me make it a bit more precise, saying that you might say, this is completely out of domain of validity. And you can take two approaches, say, yes, that's true, but I'm going to compute this partition function anyway, and then see what I get. But and it turns out, to work. But I'm going to argue why actually doing that may not be entirely crazy and perhaps does not take you out of the regime of validity. So let me... okay, let's see. Yeah. So in this case, in particular, p not equals 0, this curly f becomes this thing. So it becomes pi over phi naught times minus 1/6 times dabc pa pb bc. So DABC are the triple intersection numbers of the Calabi-Yau. Yeah. So this here is nothing but the triple intersection number of the divisor P. P are the magnetic charges. Plus C2A, BA. C2A are the components of the second Chern class of the Calabi-Yau. Plus then 1/2 PA, DABC, phi B, phi C. Okay, these are the perturbative terms, if you want. And then, well, you get this. Stuff, 1 over phi naught 2h minus 2. And stuff like this, we get b. Plus then, well, plus a face, but doesn't matter. All right, so now, Okay, so in the case that the divisor P is what's called a very ample divisor, this here, which, so the sum over beta is sum over holomorphic two cycles, and for a so-called very ample divisor, the intersection product of any holomorphic two-cycle with this divisor, which is this thing, is positive. This is positive for very ample divisor P. Yeah. All right, so keep that in mind. Now, so what we're interested in is doing some expansion around the saddle point of this thing and have like what an infinite order of 1 over n corrections around this point. So at the saddle point, solving these equations I wrote down earlier, you get that phi naught is roughly looks something like minus p cubed over q naught. I mean, there's a dabc here and so on, but I suppress all that. It goes basically like 1 over q naught. And similarly, phi A goes like phi naught QA. There's some p-dependent contraction here, but yeah.
Other point, assuming Q naught is large.
No, this is a general formula. So, well, it's actually there's Q naught minus some shifted Q naught and so on. But so for the large Q naught limit, this is accurate. So you see that when Q naught goes to infinity, phi naught goes to 0. Yeah. And, okay, well, you might say, well, that's problematic because then G topological, which is proportional to 1 over phi naught, goes to infinity. And so this topological string free energy, which is probably defined as an asymptotic series in G topological, which, well, not seem to converge. But however, note that if phi naught goes to 0, then, okay, this blows up indeed, but at the same time, this goes to 0 exponentially, right? Because, so this phi naught is negative, as you see here. So these terms, actually, when phi naught goes to 0, become exponentially small, right? So if you're just evaluating this this series, right, you see that, you know, if phi naught becomes smaller and smaller, the convergence of this part actually becomes better and better. So from that point of view...
Sorry, I don't understand. There is a constant term also.
Yeah, okay. So there is a constant term, but that's for h equals 0. So that term has...
No,
for all h.
That's the part where there is no mapping, wrapping, or recycling.
You're right. Yeah, well, we looked... Right. Right. So, but that term you can resum, right? Right. So, we did that, but I forgot to deal. So that term, the constant term, you can actually resum, and you can compute the large, the small finite limit of that term as well. I forgot the result of that. But anyway. Well, that's something to check then in any case. But the remaining terms definitely seem to be harmless.
Now, this. Even if you resum it, I would imagine that. Oh, I see. So.
Yeah, I should. I mean, we did.
Resum it into MacMahon function or something.
Right,
like that, then
yeah.
It's going to become zero.
Oh, yeah, now I start to remember that. You get this MacMahon function, and then you can actually again show that in the finite small limit. It will just go to 1.
Yeah, but one would be worried that there can be some non-perturbative term.
Of course, yeah. No, I'm not, I mean, so this what I'm now saying now is also, it's not relevant actually for the derivation that I'm going to do. I'm just saying, in the end, we will find a result that more or less confirms a conjecture. And so you might say, well, how can that be possible? Because it seems to be completely out of the regime of validity. I'm just now saying, well, it's maybe not that widely out of the regime of validity.
It's a check of a computation, not an explanation of the results.
Exactly, yeah. This is just to give an idea of...
If I understand correctly, the small exponential correction that you wrote to those three conjectures of order 1 in the regime are good. Presumably of order e to the minus 1 over g string or something like that, and g string is order infinite.
Oh, you mean the small...
Presumably what you call small is order 1 here, but somehow it doesn't matter.
Right. Well, if it's... Right, but maybe they disappear for some other reason. That's right, yeah. it may also be, I mean, again, I mean, if these so-called small, I mean, these corrections are, for example, of this form, something like proportional to p cubed times phi naught, then, well, at least if you then let p grow to infinity faster than phi naught.
I'm assuming you're doing it in a regime of fixed p.
fixed p, but large p, yeah. It will be large p, but fixed, that's right. Okay, well, anyway, I mean, whatever the explanation for the fact that it will turn out to work, that's an entirely different question. So let me just give the computation then. Okay.
Zero being large, you haven't said anything about p.
That's right.
P
yeah.
Would be 1, for example, of order 1.
But I will for the approximation I'm going to make actually. P should not. P should be large as well. Even though I know that it also works in at least in a number of cases for p small.
What's the technical statement in terms of p? What do you want p cubed to be large? What
for the total point, it doesn't matter, right? Because for phi a's, it's just Gaussian.
Yeah.
And for subtle point of approximation for phi naught.
No, for the subtle point of approximation, this no, it's just for the microscopic computation that I'm going to give. I think probably it should be all right. Also for p small, but the reason why I say probably is that you understand why I say probably. so this is it's probably because it's a work in progress. If you want, so this like the error estimates and so on, which are technically harder, that I haven't finished completely yet. But anyway. So, the computation. So we take a D4 brain wrapped around divisor P. which we expand in EA JA. So JA is a basis of H2 of X, which is the same as H11 of X. So I take X some generic Calabria threefold. So then you take it just, you know, like a single smooth large divisor. We work in a large volume limit. Now turn on U1 gauge flux on P. In that case, so this D4 brain, so turning on this gauge flux will induce D2 and D0 brain charge. Something. And okay, on top of that, we are also going to put the zero brains on P, just point like zero brains sprinkled over P, which you can, if you want, you can understand it as some point like instanton limit of the flux F, or if you turn on the B field, this gives some smooth non-commutative instantons. But anyway, you just, for the purpose of this talk, you can just think of this as n points moving around on P. Okay. Sorry? No, it can be anything. But issues of quantization shifts and so on will also become irrelevant for the reason that will be apparent soon. Anyway, so the total D0 charge in the usual supergravity conventions, where a D0 brain has D0 brain charge minus 1, actually, is minus Q0 equals, obviously, N. Then there is the D0 brain charge induced by the flux, which is minus 1 half F squared integrated over the divisor. And then there is contribution from the curvature of the D brain, which is the Euler characteristic of the divisor divided by 24. This is the total D0 brain charge. The D2 charge is somewhat simpler. It's just given by QA equals GA dot F, right?
So the full factor of P somewhere, right?
P. Where?
So you have one copy of the D4 brain, just one pass, or multiple?
Yes. It's one. Yeah, it's not right. It's okay. Like in right. So you, yeah, at a generic point in the moduli space of this linear system that describes the divisor. Okay, now. Of course, to have a supersymmetric configuration, you cannot just turn on any flux. So, the requirement for this thing to be supersymmetric is that the two zero parts, and therefore, of course, also the zero two parts of F equals zero. Yeah. Now, so for anti-self dual, but that's automatic. So when F, so I guess when the equation of motion is satisfied, and when F 2 0 equals zero, so when it's harmonic, and when F 2 0 equals zero, then it's going to be then there's only a 1 1 component, which is anti-self dual apart from the non-primitive part, which is actually self-dual, but that's fine as well. That's supersymmetric as well. So this is really the only condition. I mean, so this is a U1 gauge flux. So for that, this is just the only condition. Okay. So for generic fluxes that you turn on, right? So for F in H2P, which can be huge, you know, if P is complicated, this is. Is much, much bigger than that. So for generic fluxes, this and generic points in the moduli space of the divisor, this will not be satisfied. Yeah. There's one exception namely, so, right. So if F is pulled back from a two form of on living on the ambient variety on X, so if F is pulled back from X, right? So in other words, I would mean F is some M A times J A, right? So J A is now considered to be the form pulled back to the divisor. So for those, well, F is automatically for any modulus. F02 equals 0. Wait, so for any embedding of P's, for any point in the divisor moduli space, F02 will be identically 0 in that case, right? Because these are 1-1 forms, all the ambient 2 forms are 1-1 forms, and so that's just 0. What was your question, sir? In that case, F is just 1-1 automatically, right? No, so there's, in this case, there's no permittivity condition necessary. So the non-primitive Fs will be self-dual, and the primitive ones, which are the majority, are anti-self-dual. But, well, so the non-primitive component of F will will basically just so if you imposed also that the phase of the central charge was zero, yeah, so you say the n equals the conserved supersymmetry has phase zero, then you would get this primitivity condition. But in this case, this phase can be arbitrary. So you're thinking, well, in the case of orientative faults and so on, you typically get this primitivity condition. But that actually comes from requiring that the phase of the conserved supersymmetry is zero. Sorry?
I'm thinking of just dy.
But the Donaldson-Lundbeck equation, there's this, the right-hand side doesn't have to be zero, there is a constant that you have, and so this constant, having this constant non-zero determines the phase of the central charge. So
let me just make sure I understand. The case where D4 and D0, when you have, this is the leading terms have been checked, I think. The ones that you're transitioning. So the novel here is the addition of D2 charge. Is that, am I understanding
yes.
correctly?
Yes.
So that's what's not been checked yet.
Yeah, so it will be, right, so it will be the fact, I'm turning on more.
So you're extending the D0, D4 to D0, D2, and D4. The D2 is the underlying statement.
So D0, D4 has been checked, but only the leading exponential.
No, so, I thought also the C2P, also the first...
Sorry. So this and this, that has been checked, but what I'm... So the saddle point the saddle point approximation has been checked for D4 and D0, and just adding D2 is not a big generalization. But what I'm going to check is that the infinite. So if you do the saddle point approximation, but you take into account the infinite series, the infinite series of 1/n corrections, then you still get the right results. And so that's it's an infinite series of corrections, which is a non-trivial result.
So you might have as well checked with D2 0.
Yeah, that's right. But it's actually it's easier to allow. I mean, it's actually crucial that that we're going to be allowed to turn on any flux in H2.
Aspect of Fourier versus Legendre nature of the oscillator.
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. So but the crucial thing is for just generic F in H2P, which, as I said, can be much, much larger. So the dimension of H2P is proportional to P cubed again. So if P cubed is huge, H2P will be much, much bigger than H2 of X. So there will be actually many more fluxes than that. And so for those, that are not pulled back then, F02 equals 0 implies... Well, so the number of 0-2 forms on the divisor equals the number of moduli, right? So this gives in other words, H02 equations for H20 variables, right, which are the divisor moduli. So generically, you expect some discrete set of solutions, some isolated solutions. So even though for a generic point in the moduli space it is not satisfied, if you tune the moduli of the of a D4 brain, yeah, you will find in favorable cases isolated points in the moduli space for which this becomes satisfied. Okay. All right. So in other words, I mean, this, you see that this is in spirit very similar to the problem you encounter in counting flux vacua, in closed string flux vacua in string theory, right? So typically, you know, you turn on arbitrary fluxes, and then the supersymmetry condition is also something of this form, right? Like you select one particular component in the Hodge composition, yeah? And so, therefore, actually, the techniques developed there for counting these guys, we can also apply here. So let's make this more precise. So remember, in that case, well, the way the counting became possible was in part because, well, there's this nice superpotential and so on, so you're counting critical points of the superpotential. So do we have the same thing here? Oh, yeah, and, well, that was one thing, and the second thing is also the reason why the formulas became so pretty and simplified a lot was because of the underlying special geometry structure. So the question is, do we have these two things here as well? And the answer is yes. So there is some superpotential from which this can be derived, and there is some sort of special geometry structure called n equals 1 special geometry underlying stuff. So, okay. So let's say sigma f is Poincaré dual 2 cycle 2f. And let's expand sigma f in a basis. Basis of the second homology of the divisor P. So then, in a especially small neighborhood of the divisor moduli space, so we can define periods. Right. Okay. So. Okay. So parametrize M by moduli Z I. So I runs from 1 to N, where N is H 0 2. Well, it's left. Let me. Yeah. Right. Sorry. So there we define periods by alpha of z given by integrals over tree chains. So gamma alpha is a tree chain with one boundary at least equal to sigma alpha on P, and then possibly there's like some Z independent boundary, right? Right, so this sigma alpha boundary depends on Z, on the moduli of the D4 brain. The other parts would be independent of Z. So this possible other boundary introduces some additive ambiguity in this period, but that, since this will contribute to the superpotential, we're working with rigid supersymmetry, this will not matter. Okay. And so now define the superpotential. Simply M alpha. Sorry?
Sometimes gamma may not exist, then you have to declare remaining fold which has two boundaries.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right. So it's not, I'm not saying that gamma alpha has only the boundary on sigma alpha. I say no, chi chain with one bound, okay, yeah. With a boundary component equal to sigma alpha, and then possibly there can be an additional boundary component that does not depend on z. But that will just give a z-independent constant, so it's not. Okay. So you could write this as, obviously, m alpha, gamma alpha, omega. So it's just a chain integral, all right? Now I'm saying the critical points of W are precisely, this is well known actually, so critical points of W are precisely the points where F02 equals 0, so this can be seen as follows. Take an infinitesimal holomorphic variation of W, yeah. You get, so if you call this gamma, right, it's equal to this, and that in turn is equal to this thing where, delta n is the holomorphic vector field on P parametrizing the deformation, right? Gamma is gamma, yeah, right, it's gamma f. Yeah, it's gamma f, right, it depends on f. Superpotential depends on f indeed. Okay. So just a contraction of this holomorphic vector field variation with omega. And, that you can write, since sigma f is the Poincaré dual of f, you can write as integral over p of f wedge contraction of delta n with omega. Okay. So, as is well known, this contraction with holomorphic vector fields with omega gives two zero form, and in fact defines in the isomorphism between two zero forms on p and holomorphic deformations of p. Right. So, doing all possible variations of this W generates here a basis of two zero forms. Yeah. And since the wedge product of F with all of these has to vanish integrated over P, you get that if this equals zero, F 02 has to be zero. Okay. So that turns our problem in a problem of finding critical points of a superpotential. Okay. Very good. Now, okay. Yeah, actually, I was just thinking, so I probably need maybe half an hour, but this would actually be a good point to break before we get into the hard core of the calculation.
I can put a message.